Hey everyone, coming up on the show, I have Rob Jules, a best-selling author, a inspirational and motivational speaker, and a father. So check it out, stay tuned, and sit back, relax, and grab your favorite beverage, and I'll catch you on the other side. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Inside the Asperger Studio Presents Stories. Today, I'm joined with Rob Jules, an inspirational speaker, a best-selling author, a father, and a motivationalist. Welcome to the show, Rob.
It is great being here. I'm excited about our conversation.
All right. I usually like to start off with asking, where were you born, Rob?
I was born, it's interesting because I've got 2.5 million miles in the air professionally. I've delivered seminars in every state but two and many countries around the world, and I've never lived more than 20 minutes from where I was born. So I was born in Silver Spring, Maryland, of all places.
So you traveled a lot. I mean, you just live to entertain, don't you?
I do. Now, I don't necessarily live to travel. I have to tell you that it's just sort of part of the profession of being a professional speaker. And I truly, when they call your name and they go, now, ladies and gentlemen, let's bring him up. Boy, I'm excited. But just like anybody else, I've spent many a day and night, you know, waiting for delayed flights, stuck in really bad hotel rooms, eating some bad food. So it's not quite as glamorous as it looks, but the job itself is glamorous and it's just a byproduct. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I get that feeling about travel. My brother is a professional chef who works for a company called Cargill. And before COVID hit, he'd be traveling all over the U.S. to work with different restaurants and stuff. And he said he loved to travel, but he hated being away from family.
Exactly. I actually, one of the books I wrote, because normally I write books about selling or presenting, but one obscure book I wrote was called The Way of the Road Warrior. And I almost got booked on the Oprah Winfrey Show with it. I actually was going through the booking process and she retired the show. But I almost got a piece of the Oprah lottery.
You missed it by that much.
That much. But the reason why Oprah was interested, because Oprah's not going to put a sales trainer on, was because I really was looking at what that level of travel does to a family and does to the dysfunction that it creates with friendships and relationships and children. And I'm blessed. I'm married to a woman who's not quiet, and she really kind of put her foot down, and I made certain changes so I could be more in balance and didn't miss the growing up of my children. But it's really difficult because, you know, when you're, and I mean this modestly, but when you're having a level of success, nobody teaches you how to back off that throttle of success. In other words, you just want more of it. It's like a great food. You want to eat more and more of it, but at what cost? And that's what the book was about.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, once you get that taste of success, you want more and you want more and you want more because it just fuels you.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, this was particularly with me. I was, you know, really kind of big in the 90s, early 2000s. But my kids were pretty young at that time. But, you know, I had a limo showing up at my house to pick me up. I had a limo on the other side of wherever I was landed to pick me up. I was staying in very nice hotels, you know, riding first class. It was sweet, as they would say. But at what cost? And I am really glad that I pulled back from that. And once I did, there weren't limos waiting for me anymore. There were Uber, Lyft, and cabs waiting for me. And I was sitting in coach and fighting for gigs and seminars like everyone else. Because in the speaking world, the more you speak, the more you get booked. So when you pull yourself back, it makes getting booked more difficult too. But as I come down the home stretch of my career, I tell you, there are many things I'm proud of. And one of the biggest ones is being helped to make the decision to put my family ahead of whatever level of success I could achieve.
Now, what people don't know about Rob is one of his sons is an actor and comedian.
Yes, he is. Yes,
you must be very proud of him.
I am. I am. I knew our humor would work. And actually, if anybody, whoever's listening, if you remember the Megan Rapinoe Subway commercial where she's kicking the soccer ball and changing the screen on people of what they should order. My son is actually in that commercial. He's the poor guy that's eating a hamburger that gets belted by a Megan Rapinoe fastball to knock it out of his hands. But so if you want to catch what the boy looks like, there he is.
Now, that brings me up to another question that you're talking about motivation, Rob. What motivates you? What drives you?
That's a really good question. And I think it's almost like asking me what my favorite movie is. On a different day, you might get a different answer. So, but there's always I think we all have about five or six go-to movies we like, catch us in a different mood, they change order. For me, what motivates me professionally is the buzz from an audience, just the feel, and you know it. The cool thing about stepping on a stage, and I've been doing it for about 40 years now, the cool thing about stepping on a stage is when you're on your game and the audience is responding, everybody knows it. And when you're not on your game and the audience isn't responding, everyone knows it. But
it's like a comedian when they go up on the stage and they bomb, they know it right away.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. They know it. In a seminar, it's audiences tend to be a little bit more polite. We don't get sniped quite as badly as a comedian, but in one of my books in particular, I am methodically write out how in a professional setting we deal with, we call them snipers, basically hecklers. So it's that feel. And Reed, I have to tell you that there's when the pandemic hit and, you know, we're still kind of working our way through it, to go virtual on one hand was a dream come true for me, because now I get to do what I do and not leave my home. But the bad part was, you asked me what motivated me, I tell you that buzz from the audience, that energy I'm pulling, and you don't pull it in a virtual. Rarely am I even looking at my audience. I usually have my notes over my screen. And so I can't even see them if I wanted to. And that part is tough. It's tough to perform for hour upon hour to a blue light, but we do what we got to do.
And I'm sure the athletes, even the Olympians, get that feeling right now with COVID going on and no audience to sit there and cheer them on. It's the same thing with baseball and any sport. How do you compete when you don't have that cheer of the audience roaring for you?
Yeah, and that's really a great connection, because they've been talking about it, the athletes. And, you know, on one hand, I sort of forgot. I detached myself from what I do and what they do. And I thought, come on, you're a world-class athlete. You know, run around the track. You can do this thing. You've been waiting for this moment. And on the other hand, well, yeah, you can imagine the level of just energy that an athlete pulls from that crowd cheering them. It's no wonder that it's just a fact that a home field advantage, a team that's playing at home in the NFL, for instance, immediately gets three extra points in Las Vegas on the betting line simply for being at home. And those aren't people who are betting with their hearts, they're betting with their heads, meaning they see it as a significant advantage because of the energy the audience is putting into that home team.
Now, Rob, what makes you feel inspired or your best self?
I feel inspired when I know I've done my best. And it's funny, not when I've necessarily succeeded, but when I know I've done my best. So I happen to be a really bad golfer. I don't golf well. I don't golf much. But it's a little bit like playing golf sometimes. It really doesn't matter what the opponent's doing. It's really has nothing to do with your swing or your game. So for me, just having the knowledge, regardless of the outcome, of knowing that as a performer, as a presenter, that I have absolutely left it all out there on the stage. And one other real quick thing, to this day, it sort of bothers me back to sports a little. When you go to a ball game and the team doesn't play that well, and the first thing in the press conference you hear is, you know, we just didn't have it today. We just didn't have it. We didn't bring our A game. To me, it's personally insulting because I can assure you, I'll always bring my A game. I can't predict how the audience will react, where the lighting will work. You know, there's so many things I can't control, but bringing my A game, how would I forget not to bring my A game? And I wish when teams do that, they'd let the fans know and say, hey, tonight you might want to pass on tonight's game. We're not intending to bring our A game. So it's that just personal knowledge that you gave it all you had. That to me lets me sleep like a baby.
I mean, you get that sometimes with sports. I mean, especially when you're in the playoffs, and sometimes you see a team and they're not playing to their best, and you say to yourself, they're not giving their A game. They don't care at this point. They think they've beat it. They think they got the other team, and all of a sudden that other team sweeps them, and then it's like, you guys flat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And they'll tell you, we did have back-to-back games, or we were coming from the West Coast. I can't tell you how many times in my career I was taking red eyes into, you know, from here to there, and I'm being paid and I can't show up and tell my client, listen, you know, I just got off a red eye, or I've been doing back-to-back seminars and I'm going to back it down a tad tonight. You understand I'm tired. It doesn't work that way. So I never get it from the other side. And one last thing I think your audience should know, when I first got on this call with Reed commented on the fact that I was sitting. And when Reed was on my podcast, I was standing. And because that's where my energy is. And I really thought, what the heck am I doing sitting? I want to give Reed everything I got. I don't want to say, hey, Reed, sorry about that one, but you know, I was tired. So it's about doing everything that you know you can do, taking no shortcuts, putting it all out there, and not worrying about how far the ball goes, or let's control what we can control. And that inspires me.
Now, finish the sentence, Rob. I'm at my best when.
Well, there's the one that creeps into your head first. It's just, and I was going to say when I'm well rested, but that's a terrible answer. I'm just letting you know where my brain went. I think I'm at my best when it doesn't always work this way, but liking the client, in other words, liking the gig that I've got, certainly helps me get to my best. I don't want to contradict what I just said to you and say, because if I don't like the client, that's no excuse to say, well, if I had liked you better, you'd have really gotten the best of me. But I'm clearly at my best when I like the audience. The audience is liking me. I like the client. I think that's it. But I got to tell you, ask me again in 5 minutes. I'll bet you'll get a different answer. So it's that kind of stuff. But yeah.
All right. Let's get to know you a little bit better. Okay. If you could turn back time, Rob, and talk to your 18-year-old self, what would you tell him?
I tell him, relax. You're going to be on a journey. You're going to take some steps forward, a couple steps back. It's not all going to come to you all at once. But I think I'd tell me, but walk tall, walk proud, keep smiling at people. Be open to other ideas.
All right.
And enjoy the ride, because it's a ride. You know, I don't want to sound like some old guy, but you know, I'm going to be retiring in a year or so. And it's been a wonderful ride. I wonder how many days and nights I spent worrying about things that I couldn't really control, that my older self would have said, just like your first question or second right out of the gate, you just leave it all out on the field, and you don't have to worry about not sleeping or the outcome of the game. You're going to win a whole lot more than you're going to lose that way.
All right. If you can have a billboard with anything on it, Rob, what would it be and why?
Oh, I think it would have two words on there. It would be a picture of me, of course. And the words would be energy and enthusiasm. Those are, I call them the great equalizers. You show up with energy and enthusiasm, and you can make up for a lot of other deficiencies. And on the flip side, from an audience standpoint, I always feel like an audience will forgive a lot of things. You know, you could drop your notes. You could stumble walking up onto the stage in life. There's a whole lot. You know, what an audience will never forgive is a lack of energy and enthusiasm. And so, the cool part about that is that I can't control whether I'm going to trip or not. I'm trying not to, I'm watching where I'm going, but it's a math equation. Eventually I'm going to trip. Yeah. But I can always control my energy and enthusiasm, and that puts a smile on my face. So I believe in it so much. I wear a lightning bolt when I present. That stands for energy and enthusiasm. I got what's called a bobblehead of me with two words on it that says energy and enthusiasm. I take those words very seriously. That would be on my billboard.
All right. Who has been the most important person in your life, and can you tell me about them?
Be my dad, who's no longer with us. And I will tell you about him. He was an incredible person. I may get emotional even talking about him. Incredible guy. First of all, he was a warrior. He fought in D-Day, hit the beach at Normandy, was actually in the first wave, which he would have never survived if his boat hadn't been hit by a mine, killed half the men on board. But they had to fix the propeller on that boat, and he came in the third wave, which was still very iffy, but he survived it. He fought in Korea. He was a Marine. Corman, and he was my hero. He also had this ability to walk into a room and the room would sort of buzz around him. He wouldn't attack that room. There was something that he put out there. And as a kid, I got to tell you, I just used to stand there and just look up and go, okay, I got to take notes because that's the way I'm going to be. And he was able to see me speak professionally a few different times and share in that. And I really feel like I'm just an extension of him. At least two of my books are dedicated to him. He was a tremendous salesman as well. Taught me a lot about selling, and just a good man and a great leader.
What was your favorite subject in school?
Favorite subject in school? I had anything to do with speaking. I was the weirdo. I liked whatever class I was in where they said, and for extra credit, if you give an oral report, I was like, sign me up, because that's the one I know I'll get an A on. I was not a great test taker. So when we had any type of speech or communications classes and things like that, I was always up front and ready to go. And even at University of Maryland, I was a double major. I was a business major, but once I started taking communications classes, and I thought, oh, finally, something that I'm almost a natural athlete at, it, something that's coming easy to me, memorizing accounting laws and rules and economics, that did not come easy to me. So anything to deal with communications.
All right. I guess you'd consider yourself an extrovert then, right?
I do.
So out there.
Oh, I do. I'm a card carrying extrovert, but just so you know, even extroverts, you put me into a group of people that I don't know. And if I'm not working professionally, in other words, if I'm not at a corporate site, I don't feel like running up and talking to all, you know, I have to be in the mood for it. Professionally, there is there's no such thing as being in the mood for it. So not only am I, when you see me on stage, being very extroverted, clearly, but I feel an obligation to carry that character off the stage. So when I'm having dinner with a client, I played golf in certain client events where they want me playing with the customers, etc. Oh, I'm quite the extrovert. But between you, me, and the microphone here, even extroverts will tell you, we don't all want to jump around and be the cheerleader. We it comes easier to us, but we have our downside too. Last thing, and that's this. The most difficult thing for me in my career was never speaking professionally. To me, it was always having dinner the night before with clients. because I knew what they were expecting. I couldn't show up and go, how's everybody doing? I'm not really, I'm kind of tired from the flight. I'll just have that, the beans and the steak, and please talk to somebody else. I got to be like me, Mr. Happy and hello, and I better be entertaining at that table. And I feel much more comfortable in front of 500 people I don't know while I'm standing on a stage than three people at a dinner table I don't know. That's a rough gig.
Now, I can tell you, people, you can feel it listening, but just talking to a Rob alone, you can feel that energy coming, just coming out from that computer. When you're talking with him, that energy just radiates out and he just fills you with his energy. He's that kind of guy.
Thank you.
Appreciate You're welcome, it. Rob.
That's the energy talking.
Now, Rob, what are the best resources that have helped you?
Best resources. Huh. Well, remember, I'm a guy who pretty much has lived on the road. So anything, you know, as strange as this sounds, from a technology standpoint, if we consider that a resource, I think an iPhone was the greatest invention ever created. I mean, laptops are nice, and but to have a miniature computer in your pocket or hooked to your belt, and one that I can do 100 different things, probably the least of which is speak on a telephone. I think it's amazing. So, I just think travel has become so easy. I was thinking the other day of how, when I first started, I had to call a travel agent, I had to wait for my paper ticket to be mailed to me. I better not lose that paper ticket or I can't get on the plane.
And, I know that feeling. I mean, when I was traveling across Europe, it was like my travel agent's like, I'll send you your ticket. I'm like, okay, I better not delete the email once I get it. I better remember it's in my email box.
Yeah.
I better print a copy of it just in case I need it.
Yeah. Well, when I was younger than you, and I still am, I'm older than you, but when I was younger, we didn't have email. I'm talking about me traveling. I used to do flood seminars, 2-day flood seminars to claims adjusters, actuaries, and underwriters for Computer Sciences Corporation when I was in my early 20s. And I flew all around and there was no internet and there was no emailing. And you had to physically make sure you did not misplace your ticket. And one time in Minnesota, if anybody's ever been to that airport in Minnesota, you understand how long that airport is. I lost my ticket. Oh, I was connecting. I lost it while I was walking and they were not going to let me on that flight, which seemed kind of crazy. I'm not talking about the 1940s. I'm talking about like 1993 or so, but I had to backtrack probably a mile walk. I still didn't find it. And somebody found it and took it to the gate right before that flight took off without me. So it was to have those resources, the ability to have it in your calendar, have it in your email, have it in your hand. You can have it on your, you know, in your back of your head. But to be able to do that is really tremendous, and book our own flights and all that. That really opened things up for me.
I mean, yeah. I mean, where would we be without our cell phones, our laptops? Technology today is what it is. I mean, without it, people couldn't survive nowadays.
No, I can't imagine it. And even being able to look at messages, you know, my wife sometimes gives me a tough time because when she's walking this way, looking for something, I immediately check my messages. But as I explained to her, I can do that when you barely even notice me doing it, or I won't do it at all. I'll just do it at the end of the day while we're on vacation, whatever. But I get about 100 emails a day. So that's the end of our vacation at the end of the day. Or I can just chip away at it. Well, I'm waiting for a meal. I'm standing on the corner on this. So I'm not addicted to my phone. I love the fact that I can just get little things done around my schedule, even when I'm vacationing. And to me, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I know that feeling. But the problem with cell phones and technology is it disconnects the society from who we are. I mean, you see all the pictures of parents sitting at the kitchen table with their kids and everyone's got a cell phone to their face. No one's talking or texting to each other. It's either live with it or live without it.
Yeah, that's the dark side. And I completely agree with it. So sort of, I was a basketball player. You live by the jump shot, you die by the jump shot. You can live by that iPhone or you can die by that iPhone. I think the key is to, you know, moderation. And certainly people, I've seen the same thing you. I've seen them out at restaurants, entire family, and no one's talking. They're all head buried in the phone. And I, like you, I find it almost tragic. It's sad.
I mean, one of the best stories I was told was when I was volunteering at the planetarium here in Chicago, my supervisor, like me, was on the spectrum, and so were her kids. They went out to Iceland for a vacation, and here she's looking out the window, looking at all these spectacular mountains and volcanoes, and what are her kids doing? Staring at their cell phone. And she's like, guys, get off your phones and look at nature.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. Anyways, Rob, if you can interview anyone from your life, living or dead, but not a celebrity, who would it be and why?
Not a celebrity. Well, you got me there. Because I want to slide in my celebrity if I could. My celebrity crush, sort of, just platonically, of course, would be Jim Carrey. But you're not letting me interview him, so I got to move off of that one. So who would I interview if I could interview anyone? Well, the easy answer would be my dad, because I never really formally interviewed him. And, you know, he's been gone for about 10 years or so. I actually don't know how long. I don't commemorate the date, month or year. So I made it a conscious effort never to be care about that. Gone is gone. And it just, you know, take something away from your life. No. But if it weren't my dad, who would I interview? Huh? Hang on, I'll get you a good one. I maybe Lincoln, you know, I mean, I might go way back. I want to talk to, you know, amazing leaders. So without putting any, you know, really coming at this thing, and you know, Reed likes to has some questions he'll show you, but I will tell you, Reed sent me some questions and I did not want to look them over. I picked a few of them out of there, but I was like, I'm not looking, because I love authenticity and spontaneous.
Well, so those very few beginning questions I realized were for those of people who are on the spectrum. So kind of get more of them personal.
Yeah.
The lives of people. And I realized that when you sent the questions back, I'm like, oh crap. Those first few questions were for those who are on the spectrum to get more personal with them.
Yeah. So, Reed, I think it would just be somebody famous in history, probably a president. But I mean, and Lincoln fascinates me because of all the presidents I've read about him in a few different books, and just how difficult his presidency was. I don't mean, you know, for him personally and for the country and the nation, and to lead us through that time. I just think it would be fascinating to speak to him. So I'll stick with Lincoln. I feel good about that one.
All right, Rob, if you could be remembered for one thing, what would it be and why?
Yeah, it would be, that's an easy one. It would be as the guy who always gave 100%, just always, just never took a moment off, got up out of his chair, no matter who he's talking to or when, to stand up, because that's going to make me better. It'd be able to deliver seminars or whatever I'm doing. And I coached basketball. I've done a lot of different, I do live auctions, whatever I'm doing. I want people to always go, you know, I saw that guy and I never saw him not firing on all cylinders, give, you know, absolutely laying it out there. I love to be known for as that guy, you know?
All right. What are you proudest of?
Professionally, or does it matter?
Doesn't matter.
Oh, well, I'm proudest of my family. I'm proudest of my three kids. I mean, we've got one who's a comedian in LA, one who is does sketch comedy in New York, and probably the most talented performer of the three of them, the youngest, lives here. But when the two go in that direction, I'm the youngest. The youngest will always go, okay, if that's the path you're blazing, I'll blaze any path but that one. She's but she plays piano beautifully and performs a little bit, playing piano in little nightclubs and stuff. I'm very proud of them. I'm proud of who they are, not necessarily their accomplishments, but just that they're really three very good people. And if you met them, you'd like them. And if I was their age, and this is kind of cool. I was thinking about this the other day. If I was the age of any of my children, I'd be their friend. And I think they'd be mine. We'd be good friends because I like who they are, you know, and that's, I'm very proud of that.
All right. And lastly, Rob, let's get to know you. Okay. How did you get into what you're doing today? How did you come up with your podcast? Where did it all start from? Did it just fall into your lap?
Yeah. That's some last question. All right. Well, now you got to pull up a chair. But I'll go quickly. I came out of Maryland. I was a lowly insurance salesman. I don't mean anything by it. I just meant I was selling life, health, and disability to Washington GO, the general office. Minding my own business. But remember I told you I loved giving presentations.
Yes.
I'm in the back of the room about 1 year into my career, waiting for a Monday morning mandatory meeting with 22 other, what we called apprentice field underwriters in their first 2 years. And the manager and the trainers got stuck. They went out for an early breakfast. They got double parked. They couldn't get out. As fate would have it, I happened to have been standing by the phone that rang in the back of the room, and a desperate New York Life trainer told me, I don't care what you do, but do something in front of that room. Do not tell them that we're stuck. Just make it work. And so I put the phone down. I got up and I did. We had a script that we had learned called the Live, Die, Quit story. We had memorized it as insurance agents. But I had directed a couple shows in Maryland and was in my spare time, like to act. And I decided as a director, I would try it. I mean, remember, I'm making it up as I'm walking to the front of the room. I'm going to teach them the components, where the pitch changes, where to pause, how to sell that script. And they came in about 40 minutes into it and just gave me the wave, said, keep going. Because again, you could feel that audience was with me. And Reed, I got to tell you, when that was over, I smiled and went, well, now I know what I want to do. Now I got a taste of that apple. And unfortunately for New York Life, they lost a good salesman that day because I didn't leave in the morning, but I knew that's the path I have to build. Now, how do I build it? And I began to go to work right from then on. I taught for something called Open University, the Learning Annex. Used to put up not free, but little boxes with programs you could attend, wine tasting, things like that for $20. And I got into the program and I would teach selling programs for $20. And I felt like a boxer, just sort of getting ring work. I just needed a sparring partner and loved it. And then began to be I was a trainer doing the flood training, but it was flood insurance training. And then just went out on my own. I'm in my 29th year as a professional speaker and the writing, all that stuff. But it all started by picking up the phone in the back of the room. And as I tell people a lot of times, you won't find your career. It'll find you. And it found me that day.
Yes. Like podcasting found me. Mm-hmm. Now we come to the set part of the set where everyone's waiting for the final questions.
The final question. Ready.
Rob, what is your favorite word?
Happy.
What is your least favorite word?
I don't want to overthink it. So I'm kind of flipping off of that, but it could be sad, but you know what? Can I just string a few of them together and then we can find a word that means this? Just lack of hustle, just somebody that isn't hustling. As a kid who nobody knew when I went to school, they didn't really label people with learning issues. There were some people that just didn't learn the same way, and you were yelled at and told study harder. And I was, in fact, I think it was the greatest blessing in the world because I probably do or did have ADD, and I probably do or did have some sort of learning issue. But what it made me do is have to read things three times and work twice as hard to get a C on a multiple choice test. But I learned to hustle. I never in elementary, middle, high school, college, I never missed a day of class, never sick, nothing, never, not one, couldn't afford to, never missed a homework assignment, never missed an extra credit. And by doing all that, I was a B+ student. That the reason why I say it's a blessing is because it taught me to hustle, and it taught me to just and appreciate the hustle. Remember where we were about at the beginning of the interview? I told you when a team comes in and they're not really hustling, it's offensive to me. maybe you just helped me connect the two, but that's probably why I never had the luxury of not being able to hustle.
All right.
Or I'd fail.
What turns you on creatively, spiritually, and emotionally?
Creatively, what turns me on is when somebody's out of the box, when somebody brings an idea that I haven't heard of before and isn't afraid to share it. I actually taught for Xerox. I taught problem solving, quality improvement, something. So I taught people how to brainstorm. I love when I'm watching a commercial, I'm the only knucklehead probably there is that, you know, when I'm watching with my wife, and my kids, that I'll pause it, rewind it, and tell my kids, watch this commercial, because I'll see something that's very creative or interesting. And I appreciate it. So there.
All right. What turns you off?
Kind of the same thing. I mean, like I said, just a lack of authenticity. Somebody that's right. Just not hustling, just going through the motion. It's offensive to me. I just don't like it. I don't always speak up, by the way, Reed. But if you want to sell me something and I don't think you're really hustling, I'm not buying it. I can tell you that right now. I'll be polite, but I'll give you a great excuse. But your product, you didn't lose me on your product. You lost me personally.
All right. What's your favorite cuss word?
Oh, my. We're going there. Well, my favorite one. I guess I throw some F-bombs out there, but I have to tell you, as a podcaster and as a professional speaker, I'm so trained not to cuss ever that I'm having trouble using the word while I'm speaking to you. So F-bomb, we all know what it means.
All right. What sound or noise do you love?
Sound or noise? I love an applause.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Silence. I'm not big on complete silence.
So what is your favorite color?
Blue.
What is your least favorite color?
Orange. Don't like orange.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I think as I get ready to, you know, and can smell retirement on its way, I used to act when I was in my early 20s and in high school and in college. I think the roles would be a little different now, but I wouldn't mind doing some acting if we could fit it all in and I could balance that with my wife. My kids are grown now.
All right. What profession would you not want to attempt?
I would not like to be a bullfighter, and it has nothing to do with the danger. I'm a guy who's done some dangerous stuff. I don't find any sport in harming an animal.
All right. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
We've been waiting for you.
And finally, Rob, when you arrive at heaven, who would you like to meet and why?
Well, first guy I want to meet is my dad. My mom's still here, I love my mother too. Don't think I don't, but I can't wait to see my dad again.
And that's it, folks. We're with Rob Jules. Make sure you stay tuned next week for Sam and his mother, Gina Mitchell. So see you later and catch you on the other side.
shout out. Still your head is stuck in a gray cloud. When you shout out, it's a good year. Get ready to go and you'll be on your way. Better let go, negative flow, feel it out of yours. Say it again, do it and win everything and you'll be on your way. Don't go waste it. Be on your way. You know it's a good life, so don't go waste it. Feel your